All right, thank you everybody. So we're gonna go through a lot of things today. We're gonna try to cover as much as we can about the next version of Windows Server. Now, I'm not gonna have a chance to take questions live during this because there's so much, but please feel free to send me a tweet, send me an email, and happy to give you whatever information I can. Now, who here was in the keynote this morning? About half, three quarters of you. I'm gonna go through the first couple introduction slides fast because we talked about them in the keynote, but I wanna kind of make sure everybody is on the same page here. You know, the big investments that we're trying to make at Microsoft, speaking from, I was 8 years at Microsoft, recently left, big investments we were trying to make here was all around consistency in the platform. Consistent code for our developers, consistent databases for our SQL guys, consistent identity for our security people, and then consistency in how you go manage it and deploy virtual machines for you guys, our IT professionals. And we're constantly taking these best practices from Windows Server, putting them up into Azure, taking best practices from Azure that we learned from running these massive applications at scale, and then productizing it, putting them in the next version of Windows Server. Now, a lot of people, when they see the next version of Windows Server, they wait, you know, 6 months, 12 months before they deploy it, oftentimes until the first service pack. Well, we want to encourage customers not to wait so long this time. And the reason why is this technology that we're introducing in vNext is not brand new. It's been running up in Azure, in some cases 3 years, 5 years. So you're actually not getting new code. You're getting well-tested code in one of the world's largest data centers. We're now just productizing it, making it available to our customers to run inside their own data center. The big goal around consistency was making sure that devices can operate the same way, regardless of which platform they're running on, whether you manage it, how it operates, and how the data flows. And we can break that across the three different types of resources that we're now trying to virtualize: our compute layer for virtual machines, our networking layer for virtualized networks, and our storage layer for software-defined storage as well. And you can see the similarities across here. You manage it, you get optimization, and then you have the data that flows through it, all with consistent APIs. And the fact that we have these consistent APIs means that your developers that are writing applications for your company, they can write the same code, the same application, and it's gonna work the same way, regardless of whether it runs in your data center, up in Microsoft's public cloud, or with a third-party hoster. So right now, there are still a few inconsistencies, but this is our major goal here. Standardize everything so it runs the same way across every platform using Hyper-V, Windows Server, and System Center. So what we're going to be focusing on today is really kind of going through the details of what's coming out in the next version. Now, a couple of notes. First of all, everything's going to be based on Technical Preview 1. This came out in October. Unfortunately, I cannot disclose anything that has not been announced. I would get fired, but I've already left the company, but I don't want to get sued this time, so even more risk now. So only what's publicly available will be what I'm discussing. The other thing, I'm not going to be focusing that much on compute in this session, because tomorrow afternoon I have an entirely dedicated session on what's new with Hyper-V and failover clustering. So I'm going to go into a lot more detail there, but we'll go through the overview today. What we'll mostly be focusing on are the enhancements around networking, storage, and then other Windows Server roles like Active Directory, DNS, web application servers. So let's talk about compute first. You know, our big goals, supporting things for the enterprise, making sure we have a great stable platform with high availability, and making sure that it's flexible. You can run these applications anywhere, run anything inside that guest operating system. Now we're going to go through some of the details here. Now, with our enterprise-grade reliability, first thing that we're going to be enhancing is the ability to add resources to running virtual machines with no downtime to that VM. Now, in the past, you've been able to do that with dynamic memory, right? Dynamic memory, you can kind of set a minimum amount of memory, a maximum amount of memory, and it's going to automatically adjust between that range. But if you have a fixed static amount, in the past, there was no way to change that. But in our next version, we will give you the ability to change that static memory while keeping that virtual machine running. So you can increase it, decrease it, reallocate it as you need. We're also going to give you the ability to add network adapters to your running virtual machines with no downtime to the VM. I mean, that's something that's even hard to do with a lot of physical servers, but Since we're able to really kind of decouple that physical server from the virtual server, we figure, let's work on this, let's optimize this. If people need new network adapters, there's really no reason to have to bring down the virtual machine. The third biggest investment here that we've made around Hyper-V is changing how we manage checkpoints. Now, checkpoints basically saves the running memory of a virtual machine, right? Let's say you want to try and test an update before you install it. Well, oftentimes, people will save the state of the virtual machine, a checkpoint. They'll test the update. If it works, they keep running with it. If it doesn't, they roll it back. Now, developers often use this as well when they're testing builds, so it's easier to uncompile. But the challenge we had was checkpoints have not been supported in production before, only in test environments. Now, the reason for this is when we actually take a checkpoint, what's basically happening is we're taking all of the running memory of that virtual machine, so everything that's stored in the memory, and we're copying it to the disk immediately. The bad thing about that and why it's not supported in production is we don't do that carefully. So for example, if you have active connections to clients and you go and restore, you could lose those connections. If you have data in the file system that hasn't been committed to disk, you could lose that data. If you have transactions or Active Directory connections or queries, you could lose those. So basically, the problem with checkpoints today is they don't guarantee the integrity of the data, meaning that when you restore it, you could lose some information. So what we've done, we've integrated with our backup technology known as VSS, Virtual Shadow Copy Service. And so if you've ever done a backup, you'll install an agent inside a virtual machine. Let's say you're trying to backup SQL. And that agent, when you initiate the backup, it will speak to the SQL server, and it will flush everything. It will make sure that the backup is complete, so you're not going to lose any data. But what we've basically done with these production checkpoints is merge these technologies. So when you now create a checkpoint, we're actually going to speak to the VSS writer, and we're going to capture all of the data when we save it. So that way, if you restore it, you're guaranteed to not lose anything. And so you're now going to be able to use this nice testing tool in production. No downtime. There's a couple improvements made to Hyper-V Manager itself. First are the ways that we actually connect to it. So we've changed the protocol, which gives us more flexibility how we can connect to VMs. Instead of, you know, having to actually specify a host, directly connect to the VM, we could connect to them by things like IP addresses. We could also connect to VMs or Hyper-V Manager using different credentials. So it kind of gives a little more management flexibility if you're doing development, testing environment. We have built-in down-level management as well. So from vNext, you'll be able to manage 2012 R2, 2012, and 2008 R2. So we're really trying to expand that to make sure you can have a single console to manage all these different versions. Now, one challenge that we also saw with customers with virtual machines is they would change, or they would edit the virtual machine's configuration file, and that was unsupported. So what a virtual machine configuration file is, that's the plain text file that comes with each virtual machine. It says, you know, the name of the virtual machine, the amount of memory, the different types of network connections, how it's connected to the storage. You know, it's kind of like a template for how that virtual machine should run. Now, since this was written in plain text, we had a lot of people that would go and manually edit those settings if they wanted to change the memory. Now, that was unsupported. And the reason why was if you went and you manually changed those settings in Hyper-V, if you move that VM to another host, we weren't copying those settings because we weren't aware that they were different. So let's say you had this on a cluster. You failed it over. Well, after you did the failover, those settings wouldn't be copied over. So that's the problem that a lot of customers have. They would be scripting. They would change all of these VMs. And then when the VMs moved around, they would lose the relevant information. So what we've done in this release, and this is a little controversial, but we've actually encrypted this configuration file. So if you open it up, it looks like machine language. You know, you can't read it. It's fully encrypted. And this is really a safety mechanism to avoid this problem, where we've had so many customers making changes, not being able to track them, and then having misconfigurations in their environment. Other big enhancement that we've made here is around backup. So traditionally, when we've done a backup of a Hyper-V virtual machine, we go and we take the full amount of information, save it to the disk. Now, there were some enhancements. Now, so first time we came out with Hyper-V, you would take the whole virtual machine, copy all of that data to the disk, very inefficient. In our latest release, 2012 R2, we would do differential backups. And so what that was essentially doing is looking for large blocks of data that had changed, backing those up. So with this release, we've enhanced that further, and we've doing what's called change block tracking. And so what we're now actually doing is every single individual block of data that gets changed, we monitor that. So when we do a backup, we're only backing up tiny, tiny amounts, which makes it even faster to back up. Now, as we look about our application, some of our enhancements here is mixed level cluster support. And so what this means is I can have a single failover cluster. I can have two nodes that are vNext and two nodes that are 2012 R2, and they live within the same cluster. Now, this is really important around upgrading. One of the big features that people are excited about are what's known as rolling upgrades. And what this basically means is you can take a four-node cluster, you upgrade one of the nodes, upgrade a second node, and then you can do a live migration. Move those running virtual machines to the two new nodes, upgrade the final nodes, and you've basically upgraded this entire cluster with zero downtime to the virtual machines. Now, a lot of people thought that we've actually had that in the past. We actually did do that between 2000 and 2003. But then we broke support for that. So today, if you're trying to do an upgrade, what you actually have to do is you take your four-node cluster, you evict some of the nodes from it, and you actually have to create a brand new cluster. So you have two active clusters. The new cluster has different names. You then do live migration between the two different clusters. You can merge it and have a new cluster. So you can do an upgrade with no downtime, but the complexity today is that you have to create two clusters while doing this, and you change the name of all the cluster objects. Now, you do everything within a single cluster, do this rolling upgrade, still no downtime to the virtual machines. VMs also have what's known as a version level. Now, we've had the version level around for a while. Hyper-V 2012 R2 is version 5. Now, we had this problem in the past when we were doing upgrades to our virtual machines, where if you went and created a virtual machine on a 2012 R2 cluster, it would immediately use version 5. And that meant it wasn't able to live migrate back to a 2012 cluster. Version 5 would only run on 2012 R2. And so we had a lot of customers that were in the process of migrating, you know, from their 2012 R2. We would automatically force them to have an incompatible virtual machine on their new host, and they can never fail it back to their old infrastructure. So what we do now is we make that upgrade of the version number a manual process. So what this means is if you have a vNext host, a vNext cluster, it's still going to run version 5 so that it can live migrate forwards and backwards. Only when you're ready to update that VM to version 6 because your whole infrastructure is ready, you go flip that switch, and then the VMs will only run on the new version and unlock the new features. So this is kind of a safety mechanism during upgrades to make sure that people don't deploy VMs that they can't move around. Hyper-V Replica, we made some enhancements around that. Hyper-V Replica is our inbox replication agent. It basically takes a virtual hard disk from a VM and goes and copies it to a different host every 30 seconds, 5 minutes, or 15 minutes. Well, what we've now been able to support is up-level and down-level replication. So as you're gradually upgrading your infrastructure, you can replicate to new hosts. New hosts can replicate to old hosts. So again, you're not locked in as part of this upgrade process to only move things in one direction. We have backwards compatibility. Another key thing here as well. So another challenge we had with replication today. If you have a virtual machine, let's say it has one virtual hard disk attached to it and it's being replicated. You then have a developer that goes and adds a second virtual hard disk. That's not replicated. We don't check for that. And so you have a developer that doesn't understand how replication works, there's a disaster, and they've lost their data. So what we do now in our next version, whenever you add a disk to a virtual machine that's replicated, we will also give you the option to go replicate that disk. We'll do that automatically. Again, kind of a safety mechanism to make sure that you don't lose data if you have people using VMs that don't understand replication or disaster recovery. We made some other improvements around high availability as well, where if we have a cluster, we lose network connections. In the past, we would trigger a failover, even if the virtual machine was still healthy and still running. So with additional cluster resiliency, We're only going to do failovers if that virtual machine can't be accessed from the outside world, if there really is a problem. We'll go into some more details around that in tomorrow's session on clustering and Hyper-V. One of the other cluster features as well is we have a scenario in clustering where if there's a temporary problem with a cluster, the cluster node will go offline, come back online. Things will fail back to it. If it crashes again, comes back online, things will fail back. And this could keep happening forever until this problem was resolved. Maybe you have a bad driver. That was really disruptive to the environment. So we built some more logic into clustering now. And if you have a node that keeps failing, coming back online, more than 3 times in an hour, we're actually going to go quarantine it, basically pause it, not allow anything to move on it, alert the administrator so they could go and investigate what the problem is. Once they fix it, or after a time interval where it stops doing this flapping, we'll then add it back to the set. It's healthy again. So again, just another way that we're trying to, you know, make things easier, less disruption in the environment. Now, one of the other big things coming soon are what's known as containers. Now, you guys may have heard of containers from things like Docker, Linux container. It's kind of becoming one of the hot trends in the industry. Containers are a lot like virtualization, but they give you more granularity. Now, if you think about what a virtual machine is, we're essentially taking an entire operating system and making a clone of it. If you want 3 virtual machines that are the same, we need 3 full instances, 3 versions of that operating system, 3 versions of the network stack, the file system stack, all of the filters, all of the drivers. And so if you really had 3 VMs that could share some information, it would actually get inefficient. So what containers do is it's a virtualization technology that allows us to break a virtual machine up into much smaller parts so that we can share them across different resources. So let's say I have a single user that needs 3 virtual machines. They're accessing the same disk. Well, we just have a single file system that spreads across all 3, a single operating system that spreads across all 3. And then the unique application gets basically separated. And so what this does is it allows us to consolidate our virtual machines significantly. Now, the downside of using containers is you lose the benefits of security and isolation. If you think about what a traditional virtual machine is, that's an isolated environment, right? If you have 2 virtual machines, for the most part, unless you do certain hacks, they're not really going to go and impact each other very much. So this is kind of a trade-off when you use containers. You get better consolidation, but you lose the benefits of isolation and security. And so a lot of people are saying, well, I can't deal with that. So there is actually a best of both worlds solution. You can run containers within virtual machines. So you essentially have each tenant, each company, has their own single virtual machine. And then within that virtual machine, you create containers for all of the different roles. So you can really optimize that, get best of both worlds there. And I guess the big thing to kind of point out here, Linux containers, they've been around for a while. We're going to be introducing Windows Server containers. So you have that same ability to break up these different components of the operating system. Now, as far as flexibility goes, we're continuing to try to improve Linux, make it work better, make it work faster, improvements around live migration, giving you the ability to go and add more disks. Linux is going to be supported or further supported in Generation 2 virtual machines. So you can take advantage of things like secure boot using UEFI. We have a new concept known as VM groups in Hyper-V that allows you to organize VMs by collection. So let's say you have several domain controllers. Well, we'll put them into a group. Then we can turn on features like affinity that's going to go spread them out so that they're running on different hosts and you don't have a single point of failure. See, the challenge that you have with a lot of these roles is if I have 4 domain controllers in my environment that are virtualized, they're running on a single host. If I lose that host, that's a single point of failure. I've taken down my whole infrastructure. So by using VM groups, we could get better organization, better management with our infrastructure. We also have the ability to better identify network adapters from within the guest operating system. And this was a big request that came from hosters. See, when a hoster would go and deploy a VM, the tenant that was inside that guest operating system, they might see 2 network adapters, but they don't know which physical external network adapter was assigned to each. You know, oftentimes you would have a physical host with a, let's say, a 10 gigabyte network adapter, and then a 1 gigabyte network adapter. But the tenant didn't know which was which when they were looking inside the virtual switch. So what we've done is we provided information from the physical virtual switch inside the tenant so that the tenant can actually pick the right virtual machines, the right virtual network adapters when they need. We've also improved our way to go and do updates for the tenants by integrating with Windows Update. And now the integration services, this is basically the set of technology that makes a virtual machine know that it's a virtual machine. VMware, if you've got VMware people, it's VM tools. So integration services, VM tools. Now, the challenge in the past was to go and update those services, the administrator would have to do it. Or they would actually have to go and tell the tenant, here is the binary, go and double click this binary and install the binary. And so if you have tenants in this hosted environment that are non-technical, that was kind of odd for them to do, or they would have to give up security. So what we're now doing with our next release is anytime there's an update to the integration services, we're actually going to push it down through Windows Update or Microsoft Update. So this way, when the tenant is doing their regular Microsoft updates once a month, or actually a lot more regularly than that, but whenever they're doing those updates, right, they'll actually see new integration services so they can install them at their own convenience. Our final big thing here was, actually, this even came up in the demo today in the keynote. Did you notice one challenge that we had with our keynote demo? The Surface tablet went to sleep. After it went to sleep, it wouldn't wake up and restore. Well, Hyper-V virtual machines have that problem. If your Surface goes to sleep, it's never going to reconnect to the network until you reboot it. We fixed that problem. Apparently, we didn't fix it in the version that we had today, but that's definitely something that we are going to be fixing here as well. All right, let's move on to networking and look at our enhancements here. Now, biggest thing here is changing how we think about networking to trying to move to a software-defined model. Now, if you kind of think about virtualization, right, what we've done is we've taken a physical server and then we've put it into software. We've taken the physical memory, put it into software, physical network adapters, virtualized network adapters, right? What we're now trying to do with networking is apply that same concept. Because when you're virtualizing your network infrastructure, you get the same benefits of a virtualized machine. It's easy to deploy, easy to copy, doesn't require physically touching and actually putting network cables there. When you want to scale up, you can rapidly do that by just cloning this piece of software. So our big investment here you're going to see is around software-defined networking, giving you more flexibility for your networking environment. Biggest thing that we've introduced here then is this new role, the network controller role. This is a role that you'll actually install through the Windows Server roles and features, a brand new role. And what this is going to do is it's going to basically be the brains of your entire networking infrastructure. It's a role that can be made highly available. And so what happens, now that you have a centralized networking controller role, anytime you want to make a networking change, it's going to register that. Anytime you want to go deploy a new IP address, it's going to register that and keep track of that. So it's basically now just a centralized point of control for all of your different networking resources. Excuse me. And this was actually based on Azure. Azure's been using this for several years, so this is another example of how we've taken the code from Azure, put it inside the product, managing both physical and virtual networks. It also gives you the ability to do network discovery. Now, if you've used Operations Manager, you've maybe seen the Network Topology Manager. It's kind of the same concept here. There's a very complicated diagram, but it kind of allows you to visualize all the different networking connections between your servers and your application. If there's a problem, something's not connected, we will highlight that so it's much easier to troubleshoot and understand how all of these different components fit together. We do active network monitoring. So if a network goes down or a service is unavailable, we'll actually go and flag that inside the new action center so that if you're actively looking at your interface, your management system, you'll see a problem. And you can, of course, tie that into different other services or applications, like go send an email, write to the event log, trigger a report through Task Manager. We've built a lot of automation here as well. So we can actually track the number of network connections and give you the ability to automatically scale, deploy new roles if you need it. So trying to build automation into the system as well. Enhancements have been made around firewall management, so you can manage your firewall centrally from a single location and apply a policy across hundreds or thousands of servers. And as part of our goals around interoperability, we support the software-defined networking protocols from both Microsoft and VMware. So what this means is if you have a VMware environment, you're using VXLAN, that same network controller role can manage it. So you could use the same brain to route traffic between your Hyper-V servers and your ESX servers as well. So again, single point of management here. Now, other big investment is around these virtualized networking functions, right? Giving you the ability to rapidly scale, clone applications. So virtualized networking is known as NFVs, our network function virtualization. And if you guys have used anything like Windows Server Network Load Balancing, it's the same concept. Instead of having a physical load balancer, we just take the same logic in the software, put it inside a VM. And so we're introducing several new roles that come in the box here. We have a brand new software load balancer that's ultimately going to replace Windows Server NLB. If you guys have used Windows Server NLB, it's not a very good product. I actually used to be the program manager for it, and I'm very embarrassed about that. It's a terrible product. So we've introduced this brand new role, came from Azure as well. It was known as Voyager. So inbox, large distributed software load balancing. We got new types of gateways that you can plumb around your environment to help protect against incoming traffic or other types of attacks there. And this distributed firewall again. Could go build these roles. It goes manages your firewall from a single centralized location. We've introduced what's known as service chaining as well. Now, service chaining essentially allows you to connect a series of networking applications to each other to control the flow of traffic. So let's say you have people that are the public. They're trying to connect to your infrastructure. Well, first thing, they probably want to go through some type of gateway. Then you want to send them through some other type of authentication. There may be a remote desktop gateway. There may be a firewall. Whatever that pattern is, we can actually define these connections between these different roles and enforce all of the traffic to go through that, chaining these different services together. We've added more Linux support as well, so we could go and interact with the Linux network adapters, integrate that inside the environment as well, and go and integrate with Azure. So that if you need to push data up to Azure fast, you could go and connect with ExpressRoute. This is basically a way that you can work with your internet service provider and get a guaranteed fast network connection up to an Azure data center. Now, as far as performance and reliability, I mentioned before that we've based this new network controller on what we've been doing up in Azure. So again, this is being tested. People think this is a new role. It is in Windows Server, but this has been used for several years in some of the largest data centers in the world. We standardized our APIs, traffic that goes up to applications, traffic that goes down to the core networking. We're improving our extensible switch so that there's more flexibility. You can plug in different resources, whether that's a security program, forwarding program, monitoring, egress, ingress. And then native RDMA support. So RDMA is remote direct memory access. It's basically a new type of networking adapter you can have that does a lot of the processing in the network adapter itself rather than having to send that to the actual CPUs. So this kind of allows you to offload networking traffic. So this is kind of a new thing coming out in the industry, making sure that we work with all of our hardware vendors to go and integrate with that. Now, as we look at our storage, biggest goal that we had around storage was reducing cost. For most customers, the two most expensive things are the physical servers for the memory and the storage to go and start backing up those applications. And now that we're generating more and more data, people need more and more storage. So we're looking at different ways that we can drive down the cost. Now, if you go and think about what a traditional SAN is, something that you go buy from a hardware vendor, it essentially is this container that you slide into the rack, right? It contains physical disks. It contains what are known as the controllers. This is the software that's kind of the brains. And then it gives you some connectors so that you can access and send data in and out. Now, essentially what you are paying for are the brains, the controllers. And that's what does these advanced features like storage tiering, where you can move data between hot and cold storage depending on how often you need it. It does things like deduplication. But we kind of looked at this model and we said, well, if you could just use commodity hardware, let Microsoft do that brains of the operation and use the same type of network connectivity, this is how we can significantly reduce your costs. So instead of having to work with these traditional storage vendors, you just buy commodity hardware, cheap disks that are replaceable, inexpensive. All of these advanced features like storage tiering and deduplication is now included in Windows Server. Let that be the brains of the operation. And then use your same types of controllers. So now customers are able to just use Windows Server to go do that advanced storage functionality, saving you guys a lot of costs. And then when you turn on something like deduplication that eliminates repeated files, you can actually consolidate a lot of storage. We had some customers say that they saved 70% of their overall storage when they turned on deduplication. Now imagine if you had, let's say, 10 terabytes of data, and you can now shrink that down to 3 terabytes. That means you might not have to go and invest in storage for several more years. Go spend that money on other resources. So what are the big investments that we've made around software-defined storage here and reducing costs? First, virtualizing it. Second thing is we've actually introduced a new set of APIs. Well, we introduced it in 2012, known as SMAPI, Storage Management APIs. And now what we've essentially done here is we've worked with all of the major storage vendors as well, EMC, Dell, Hitachi, NetApp, Fujitsu, you know, all of these main guys. And we've said, what are your APIs to go and add a disk, to create a LUN, to resize, things like that. So what we've done within our own layer now, the storage management API layer, you as the customer can go to a single interface and say, give me a new LUN. We will go and translate that and say, OK, you want a new LUN, you're using Dell storage, here's the API that Dell needs. OK, you want to resize, you're doing this on Equalogic, here's the API that Equalogic needs. And so the whole goal around this is to allow you to manage your storage with a single consistent interface. And we're kind of doing all the translating behind the scenes for you, just making it easier to manage, less tools, less different components that you have to interact with, hopefully reduce support costs. We have inbox deduplication, had that since 2012, inbox storage tiering. And that's basically where you have fast storage, slow storage, and you can move the data around based on how often you access it to kind of optimize the speed. Now, within failover clustering, there's a concept known as a witness disk. And basically, this is a disk that allows you to do voting. So if I have a distributed cluster, so I have two nodes in one data center, I have two nodes in a second data center, the best practice was to go and create this voting entity, this witness, at a third site. Now, most people have one data center. A few people have two data centers. Very few people had three data centers to be able to kind of do this voting algorithm. So what we said was, let's go use Microsoft's data center. So we can now go and create this voting entity, which lives on a disk, up in Microsoft Azure. Now, if you guys know, Azure bills by the month. It bills based on consumption. And so we've done testing of this so far. Now, this might sound expensive, but what they do in Azure is they round up to the nearest penny. We haven't got it up to a single penny yet. It uses that little resource. It's less than half of 1 cent it costs you in monthly cost. So it's essentially free being able to use this new capability inside Azure. Now, the other big thing that we wanted to introduce here is DAS-only clusters. Now, if you think about what a failover cluster is and the key requirements, right? We have one node, we have a second node, and they need somewhere to have a single consistent set of data. So let's say my SQL database, right? I want to make sure that there's a single store. Now, if my SQL server is running on node 1, it writes to that database on shared storage. If that node crashes, SQL server starts on node 2 and accesses that same database. So we've always had this requirement for some type of shared storage. Now, before 2012, you could use fiber channel, iSCSI, serial attached SCSI, or fiber channel over Ethernet to basically go and connect to that shared storage. But you still needed to actually buy a SAN. They're expensive. Now, in 2012 R2, for Hyper-V virtual machines, we introduced Hyper-V over SMB, server message block. And that basically allowed you to store your virtual hard disks in a file share. If you kind of think what a file share is, node 1 can access a file share, whack, whack, my share. Node 2 can access the file share, whack, whack, my share. So essentially, we created a low-cost way to go and store your virtual hard disks. But you still needed some type of external storage. So what we've done in this release is introduced clustering that can run using only local storage, zero requirements for any additional shared storage. Now, what's kind of happening behind the scenes here is you have a dedicated DAS disk, direct attached storage disk, on each of those three cluster nodes, or however many cluster nodes you want. We require at least three. And what we basically do is we do mirroring and replication between those three direct disks. So when a change happens on node one for a SQL database, it's immediately replicated to the other two nodes and acknowledged back, so that we have a consistent view of the entire infrastructure or the entire service all the time. So using this mirroring technology, we've gone and basically introduced a way to create clusters with zero requirement for shared storage, again, lowering the costs. So we also wanted to make some improvements around performance. Now, storage QoS, or quality of service, kind of allows you to assign a maximum amount of disk IOPS that a particular VM can use, or a minimum guaranteed amount. Now, if you have a virtualized environment, you're running lots of virtual machines on a single host, you want to make sure that a single VM doesn't use up too much of that disk IO, right? There's only, you know, one or maybe two or three pipes that go from your physical server to your storage. And if one of those VMs is too noisy, it can actually hurt the performance of the other VMs running on that host. It consumes their storage bandwidth. So by introducing quality of service, we can kind of assign, you know, a minimum and a maximum for every VM so that each VM stays within that range and doesn't use anyone else's resources. So that was fine. We've had that feature since 2012. But the challenge was managing that. You had to configure that per VM or per virtual hard disk. So we've now introduced policies that allow you to configure this change and apply it globally. So you could say, all my VMs have this much minimum, this much maximum, apply it to every VM in my environment. And as new VMs spin up in the environment, they get that policy automatically applied to them. So if you're in some type of dynamic environment, you don't have to constantly track these new virtual machines and turn on this policy. We're going to do that for you automatically. We wanted to make improvements to our shared virtual hard disks, shared VHDX. Now, a shared virtual hard disk is basically when you have two virtual machines that form a guest cluster, an entirely virtualized cluster. We introduced this technology that allowed you to, instead of having to assign a LUN for each guest cluster, you could just assign a virtual hard disk. So it made storage management easier for hosters. But the challenge we had with our last release was it didn't support a lot of features. So we wanted to go make these shared VHDX disks just like any other Microsoft storage disk that we manage. So they now support replica. They can now be resized. They can now be backed up easily using standard programs. We've also improved our cluster shared volume, CSV. So with this, improvements to performance, improvements to caching, and we can perform a check disk with no downtime to that disk. So check disk, it basically goes and validates that the disk is healthy, there's not too much data or bits which are corrupt, but in the past, you'd actually have to take the disk offline to do that. That's downtime, not good for a highly available environment. So we fix that and allow you to do that online. Now, with protection, and this is, I think, going to be one of the biggest features in the next version of Windows Server, we now have inbox storage replication, both synchronous and asynchronous. Now, this is slightly different from Hyper-V replica. You may have heard of that technology, right? Hyper-V replica will take a virtual hard disk, and it will push it to a different location. But it does that asynchronously, which means every, let's say, 5 minutes, it will see what the changes are and copy those changes. Another 5 minutes pass, it copies those changes. But if you have a crash within that 5 minute period, you could lose 5 minutes of data. So what we've now introduced here is synchronous replication. So this means as soon as a change happens in storage on one site, we immediately replicate it to a second site and wait for an acknowledgement back. This way we have guaranteed consistency across both sites. And this is something that has been available in the past, but only through third party vendors. So this is now free. It's in the box. It supports all file systems, CSV disks, traditional LUNs. The volumes don't even have to look the same. So very flexible in how we support this. We've also continued to improve storage integration using our other suite of technologies, Azure, Data Protection Manager, et cetera. So let's take a look at some of the other updates across the other Windows Server features and roles. So in this release, we've really focused, or the technical preview one, Microsoft has really focused on the core infrastructure, getting the compute, the storage, and the networking right, because everything else is kind of really built on top of that. You know, things like management, things like security. So that's why a lot of the enhancements you're going to see are focused on those core roles. Less so much on these kind of additional roles. But with the next technical preview, you're going to see more and more enhancements throughout the rest of Windows Server. So Active Directory. Our first enhancement here is you could go and authenticate Active Directory with non-traditional data stores. So if you have lightweight directory services, LDAP, if you store your credentials and your logon information in a SQL database, Active Directory could go and support those other types of databases as well now. Better integration with Azure Active Directory. And that's actually been a lot of the focus of the AD team, the engineering team that builds Active Directory, is focusing on making it better up in Azure. Fewer improvements in the on-premise solution. Windows Defender, this is the inbox anti-malware solution. This is now turned on and available on every server by default, instead of having to manually go and enable that role. But there is no graphical user interface. That is turned off by default. Now, what we really kind of think of when you're managing something like Windows Defender is you're just going to go and apply a group policy from a single place, push it out across all of your servers. So we didn't want to go and install the GUI by default because most server administrators aren't going to go to each of the different virtual machines and turn on anti-malware. They're going to do that from a single location. With DNS, we made some improvements around making it more flexible. So the first one is we do a lot more logging of different DNS entries. And this is a kind of a security best practice here. So if you see different types of attacks, different types of requests, certain applications trying to change their IP address too frequently, we start to log all of that. So if you need to do, you know, compliance, security analysis, we collect more information to make that easier. We've also updated the way that the DNS server can go and respond to requests. So if you have a request coming from a particular client or server, you can actually send back different IP addresses, or sorry, different DNS records based on what that client is. So some more flexibility there. With IPAM, so IPAM is IP address management, a feature we introduced in the current release as well. And it's kind of like a centralized way to manage all of your IP addresses in the environment. So what we've done now is we've added more login, added more historical data, so you can actually track IP address changes of a particular server or virtual machine over time. So again, if you need to do any type of audit, it's easier to discover. And then we have multi-client binding. And so what this means is if I'm a client and I have two network adapters on my server, I might have a fast one that I want to use for my SQL server or my SQL database access, and then I may have a slow one for something like management. Well, what we had in the past, when you go and got a DNS record, it wouldn't actually figure out what the best network adapter was. It would go and randomly, you get a DNS record, you send out a connection, it wouldn't go and push it through the one you assigned. It was basically random. So what we can now do is we can assign particular DNS records to be applied to particular network adapters, so you get better kind of control over the traffic flow. Windows Multipoint Services is now included in Windows Server. This was actually an entire separate SKU in the past. And what Multipoint Server does is it allows multiple people to go and actually interact on the screen at the same time. Now, this was mostly used in things like education, tourism industry, gaming, so that people could, you know, kind of work on the same project at the same time. We now introduced this directly into Windows Server as well. Better improvement with remote desktop services, so supporting new types of remote FX graphic updates. And then with the web application proxy, more flexibility about how we publish the actual addresses. So with a web application proxy, this is when people are trying to go access a website or a REST protocol, some type of web-based service. We basically allow you to do things like wildcards. You can pre-authenticate certain users. Better support for different remote desktop gateway applications. PowerShell has been one of the roles that's had a lot of work on since the last release. Version 5 is what will be released with the technical preview. Version 5 is actually available today if you want to download it, use it, take advantage of the latest versions, and run it on your current versions as well. So PowerShell is now installed by default, no additional installation. You have the ability to create a class. Now, if you have a developer background, you kind of probably understand what that is. But if you don't, a class is basically a way that you can pre-create a certain set of functions or ways that are variables or ways that a program can go and interact with a PowerShell commandlet. So it kind of gives you coding capabilities inside PowerShell, make it a little more powerful and flexible. There's a new PowerShell module for zip, to zip something, unzip something. There's now integration where you can go download internet packages through PowerShell. So if you have a script that goes and installs applications, part of that PowerShell commandlet can be speak to some type of online site, repository, download the file, wait for the file to download. Once it's downloaded, it will actually go and install it and continue the script as well. We have integration with the PowerShell Resource Gallery. This is an online kind of community site. Microsoft publishes samples there. New modules get published, MVPs. Maybe some of you in the room have been published into that. So we could go integrate with that and go and download different modules that we need as part of scripts as well. And then some improvements around eventing, performance, encryption. But the biggest enhancement, and something you're going to hear a lot more about, is desired state configuration. So DSC, desired state configuration, what this basically does is it allows you to create a text file that says, my server should have these settings. It could be the name of the administrators, the different roles and features, whether it's running full or core or min shell. And what will happen is you'll scan the environment, you'll compare a particular server or application to this predefined set of rules, and if it does not match, you can either send an alert or go and actually fix it, go and automatically make those changes. So DSC, very powerful tool for compliance and ensuring consistency across the environment. But we made some enhancements here as well. You can limit the number of targets. So if you have a large data center, we're not gonna go and apply a policy to 10,000 servers at once. We can do it to 100 at a time, so you're not flooding the network with these requests. We have centralized logging, so it's easier to understand how the whole environment looks. We have partial configuration support. So if you have a bug inside your text document, we're still going to apply as many changes as possible rather than just failing the entire change application process. And then we can synchronize this across multiple computers. So if you want to have multiple brains, multiple servers that go and apply these DSC policies, they can actually coordinate with each other, split up the load, basically break down the processing. Now, hopefully across all of that, you see we have been introducing quite a lot into Windows Server. You know, again, the big focuses with the technical preview 1 release have been that core infrastructure, improving the compute, the storage, and the networking. I encourage you to stay tuned. The new technical preview will be out very soon in the next couple of months. Internal partners, people in the TAP program, MVPs, they even already have access to it. So it is actually getting early testing and stuff. A lot of great features coming out there, a lot of great enhancements. But hopefully you can kind of see some of the direction where Microsoft is heading, really trying to take advantage of best practices in the cloud, putting them inside the technology, so we really are trying to prove these servers and services before we go and deliver them inside the next version of Windows. Now with that, I'm going to wrap it up. If you have any questions, I'll stay around for a little bit, happy to chat. If you want, just send me a tweet, send me an email, and happy to share whatever I can with you. Finally, here's a great list of resources. I of course recommend the Microsoft Virtual Academy. They have free ebooks as well. Downloading the next set of technical previews, the evaluation guides, and we're actually going to be producing some virtual labs as well based on the new technical preview, both for Windows Server and for System Center. So with that, I'll wrap it up. Thank you for coming. I'm going to leave the resources slide on here for a little longer in case you want to take a photo. Just stand in the middle. And thank you all for attending. Good night.
Thank you, Simon.